Hi, I'm Heather Mulder.
And I'm Janice Greeno, and you're listening to Dementia Untangled, where we explore the topic of dementia through conversations with physicians, experts, and community leaders.
Our discussions focus on innovative ideas, practical strategies, and proven methods to guide caregivers along a supportive path.
Hello, and welcome to Dementia Untangled. Thank you for joining us for this episode of our podcast.
Today, our conversation will be with Dr. R. Amanda Cooper, an assistant professor with the University of Connecticut, and we will be discussing communication as a strategy to manage turning points in relationships. Janice, now that we have a few seasons of Dementia Untangled under our belt, I feel like we keep hearing from people inquiring, how do we keep coming up with new topics to discuss? And I just feel like, how can we not? But it's always interesting to explore where we find guests for the podcast. And our guest today, Dr. Cooper, I actually saw her present at a weekly event that we have here at Banner Alzheimer's Institute called Case Conference. This is an opportunity where all of our medical providers from our three institutes and even beyond, staff from within the institutes are invited to learn about special cases and research projects that are happening. And it's such an incredible way to get insight into research and where it's going, and even how some of our providers think through some of the cases and patients and families that we work with. I actually saw Dr. Cooper present at one of our case conferences and just thought, this is research that has day-to-day applications, and thought she would be amazing to bring to Dementia Untangled. Dr. Cooper is actually a communication researcher. And the University of Connecticut says her research interests fall at the intersection of interpersonal, family, and health communication, focusing on the ways in which individuals and families navigate difficult transitions across the lifespan, particularly at the end of life.
I am so excited to have Dr. Cooper with us today, Heather, and I am so glad that you brought her to our attention. You know, so many changes in family relationships and communication in those relationships, they're expected. Like when children grow up, I remember in college discussing how relationships change. No longer were we relating as a child to an adult with our parents. We were transitioning from adult to adult conversations with our parents. But what I don't remember is discussing or even thinking about communication in promoting individual and relational well-being for families who are navigating end-of-life transitions such as caregiving. And so much of her work, her award-winning work, centers on this very topic, and it's been published, and it is such a privilege to have her with us today.
Welcome, Dr. Cooper. Thank you for joining the conversation.
Hello, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Before we learn more about your research, we would love to learn a little bit more about you. Tell us about your journey and what led you to connect with the dementia community.
I think my journey started with my family. So I am a family communication researcher. I study family relationships and communication. And about the time I was starting my graduate program and really starting to jump into doing some independent research was this, at the same time, my grandparents on my dad's side were really starting to begin their end of life journey. And to give you some context, my dad has 10 kids in his family. And although I wasn't home with the family, I wasn't interacting with my grandparents on a daily basis, I was observing this great family, just this huge family experience of trying to provide care to my grandparents. Both of my grandparents had some dementia at the end of their lives, and just my interactions with them and my observations of my dad and his siblings, all trying to balance this new role of being caregivers, just really made me wonder what happens to our relationships, really what's going on here as we're trying to provide care, and what can we be doing to make this a better experience? What communication would work better, or, you know, what relational practices might help everyone feel better about what's going on or have better health while they're, you know, trying to make time to provide care. And so it really started with that period with my grandparents, really their journey towards the end of their lives and the whole family affair of trying to provide care to them.
And I think your research is so applicable to our listeners and those who are affected by Alzheimer's and dementia. You mentioned you're a family communication researcher, and so often we refer to dementias as family diseases. Now, when I heard you presenting on your research, it was a lot of focus in spousal relationships and really examining when the relationship shifted. Can you tell us a little bit more about this research project?
This is one of my favorite projects I have ever done. It was my first really independent research project. And I was just wondering, again, watching my grandparents as they were changing and experiencing this disease, I started to wonder, well, what happens when you've been together for a long time, you've gone through your life together, and now you have this dementia shifting and changing the ways you're able to interact as a couple. And so for this project, what I did was I sat down and I did interviews with people who were providing care to a spouse who had dementia, so Alzheimer's or other forms of dementia. And as part of this interview, I had them create a kind of a map of their relationships. So before we sat down and had our conversation, I gave them, it was essentially a timeline, and I asked them to map out all the changes that they felt like they had experienced in their relationships from the very beginning signs of dementia all the way till the present moment, wherever they were at. And so I had people who are really across the disease trajectory. So there were some people whose spouse had been diagnosed within the year, so pretty recently, and then all the way till the complete end, I had three people whose spouses had passed away about 3 months or less prior to our interviews. So I just had this really wide range of experiences. And then I had all of these incredible maps. So I had them map out these changes in their relationships. And I had them kind of mark whether they felt this change made them feel closer to their spouse or created some distance in their relationship with their spouse. And then we were able to sit down and talk about all of these changes and talk about the communication that was happening around those changes in their relationships and really get an idea of what is this picture of change as the disease progresses? How do our relationships change?
I love this idea of taking these changes and putting them into a map, into something that's visual to help you understand what was happening. And I understand that you came upon four broad categories of change in those relationships.
Yeah, that's correct. You know, there was a lot of different changes that happened, but really they all kind of grouped around four broad changes in the relationships.
And so the first category of change that you noticed was my spouse has dementia. Can you explain that one a little bit more?
Sure, yeah. So if we're thinking about the relationship before dementia started, there's kind of like a status quo in most people's relationships, what they're used to or what they expect. And so this first change, my spouse has dementia, was really when they started to notice some changes in their spouse's behavior. So two kind of specific moments of change that most people talked about were first, these initial symptoms. People would tell me stories about just noticing these behaviors that were completely different than what they were used to from their spouse. So, you know, things like one person told me she came downstairs and her husband was making a peanut butter and jelly sandwich with a butcher knife. And like, this was just such a different behavior than she was used to. So those first early symptoms were really kind of this first change, and they really created confusion and often frustration for the caregivers, the spouses at this point who weren't caregivers yet, because they were not familiar with this behavior. They were really surprised to see this behavior from their family member. And those early times of confusion, those early symptoms really kind of created the impetus for getting a diagnosis. So a diagnosis was kind of another really solid turning point or a moment of change in their relationship. And even though a diagnosis with a form of dementia is really sad and heartbreaking, it's difficult news for a lot of people to receive. A lot of the caregivers that I talked to talked about how getting a diagnosis was such a positive change in their relationships because it allowed them to then talk about what was going on. So having the diagnosis really opened the door for open conversations about dementia, about behavior changes, and really about the future. And so that first change, my spouse has dementia, really is just about this new reality in their relationships. And of course, my study was really grounded in the experiences of spouse caregivers, people who are caring for a spouse or a romantic partner. But this change really applies, I think, to all family relationships around dementia. There's this moment where we recognize there's something different here. And that recognition that dementia has really kind of appeared or become a part of the relationship is really important because it helps. I mean, it really sets the tone for the rest of the experience, the rest of the time that they'll have together. So I would say I've titled it My Spouse Has Dementia, but it really applies, I think, to all relationships when a family member begins showing signs or symptoms of dementia.
So when the family recognizes that their loved one, the person they're caring for, has dementia, I just think it's so interesting that you have talked about how when people are first being frustrated by very interesting behaviors, behaviors that are just so unusual, and then when they finally get that diagnosis and how that actually helps them in the journey, that in itself, I mean, is powerful, having that diagnosis and now enabling them to move forward. And as they move forward, your second broad category of changes is from spouse to caregiver.
Yeah. So the second change, really, again, thinking about this context, they've recognized there's a change in their family members' behavior or their spouse's behavior. The next big change in the relationship really is a shift in how the caregiver views themselves. It's almost like a change in their identity. Because for the spouses that I talk to, their main identity in their relationship was that they were a spouse, so a wife or a husband or a partner. That's how they viewed themselves. And as the symptoms of the disease progressed, as some of the new symptoms came up, they began enacting behaviors that were just different than what they normally would do as spouses. So one of the things that so many people talk to me is conversations about driving. And one of the women that I talked to, she just put it in such good terms. She said, you know, this was a new type of conversation for us because all of a sudden, rather than being a spouse, being equals and supporters, now I needed to be someone who was monitoring his behavior. And so there was this shift from spouses to some type of caregiver. So conversations about driving privileges was a big one that really led to this change, this view change from viewing myself as a spouse to viewing myself as a caregiver. Other things that kind of contributed to this change were changing household responsibilities. Caregivers were used to a really balanced distribution and, you know, taking care of most of them had, I do these things and you do these things. And all of a sudden they were taking over some of the tasks that their spouse used to take care of in the household. So those things really started shifting the nature of their relationship. It made them feel more like caregivers and less like what they were used to, these equivalent partners or spouses. And then, of course, as new symptoms appeared, particularly ones regarding hygiene and care for personal hygiene, those ones also kind of moved the relationship further towards a caregiving relationship. And again, I think these kind of turning points are pretty common in other relationships. So for adult children providing care to their parents, having to have a conversation where you're monitoring your parents' driving is completely different than the type of relationship that you're used to. And so these little changes and really these little conversations even started to shift how these caregivers viewed themselves and move them towards viewing themselves as caregivers.
A lot of what you're talking about really reminds me of ambiguous loss, which we've addressed a few different times on Dementia Untangled, but really this idea of especially both and thinking, where you are a spouse and you're a caregiver, or you are a child and a caregiver, you have to hold these two roles together. Now, the next big transition that you found is my spouse is gone.
Yeah, this one I think is, you know, speaking of ambiguous loss, I think we see the progression of loss across these relational changes. And this relational change, my spouse is gone, I think is the one that just, it hits hard. But a lot of the spouses that I talk to express this sense that the person that they had been with all their life had changed, and that in some ways, that person that they used to interact with wasn't present anymore in the relationship. And I have to be careful here, because obviously people with dementia still have so much to offer. And I deeply believe there is still relationship and relational quality that exists. But this change often happened through things like not being able to have conversations like they used to have in the relationship. So a lot of the spouses I talked to, they mentioned, you know, my spouse was my confidant, the person I would go to talk through problems. Like, we could have these really deep and in-depth conversations. And that change, that loss of those types of conversations, has shifted how we interact, and really has made it seem like that person that I used to have these conversations with isn't here anymore. So I think that really hits again on this experience of ambiguous loss. Another change that kind of, or turning point, another turning point that led to this change in the relationship was when they had to change living situations in some way. So these spouses would talk about not sleeping in the same bed anymore as being a big change in their relationship, and something that made it again feel like that spouse, that person who I've slept next to every day, every night of my life for 20 to 40 to 50 years, they're not here anymore. And in some ways, that shifting was almost a physical reminder of some of the changes that had already happened in their relationship. I think probably the hardest turning point that happened, that not all of the spouses I talked to had this experience, but many of them talked about the moment that their spouse couldn't remember their name for the first time. And that being just, again, another change or another turning point that created this sense that that person they had been with for years was no longer present in the relationship in the way they had been before. So that's just a really difficult moment for the caregivers who experience it, and really one that changed the nature of their relationship.
It puts a lump in my throat. You think about that, my spouse is gone, and how it encompasses so many difficult things, so many difficult turning points. But I'm fascinated by the change, the fourth change, transcending dementia through love. I am so looking forward to hearing you share with us about this.
Yeah, this is my favorite part of this study. You know, when I created these, you know, I had all these timelines, all these maps of relational change, and a lot of them had this sort of downward trajectory of loss. You know, you can see a physical representation of the loss. And then there would be like notes across the top where the caregivers would write things like, this never truly created distance in our relationship, or I still love her just as much as I always have. And I just thought this was so interesting. It was almost like this dual trajectory. Like there was this sense of continued and ongoing love and care and compassion that was present even as these really difficult turning points and changes were happening. So I titled this Transcending Dementia with Love because it seemed like this was the thing that helped them rise above these really difficult relational changes. So the caregivers I talked to, they would say things like, I love my wife more than I ever have, or I feel more married now than I did the day I got married. This is what our wedding vows were about. Or they would say things like, when something like dementia happens, it can be a glue that holds us together. And so they were able to draw strength from this sense of love and care that they had for their spouse, and that enabled them to move beyond some of the really difficult relational changes that were occurring because of the symptoms of the disease.
What a beautiful and powerful way to kind of describe this duality that caregivers often, no matter their relationship to the person with dementia, experience in this, the power of love and how it can make such a difference for them. Now, beyond these four key transitions, you also identified five communication strategies that can help in managing relationships. Talk to us a little bit about this first one, having open and intimate conversations.
Yeah, I found that caregivers really reflected on the open and intimate conversations that they had with their spouse early in the disease trajectory. So I mentioned that getting the diagnosis opened the door for conversation. This is really where these open and intimate conversations happened. And they were so powerful that even at the very end, one of the women I talked to, her spouse had passed away prior to the interview. And she talked to me multiple times in our interview about this conversation they had right after the diagnosis, where they were able to say, this is scary, this is hard, and we don't know how all these things are going to work out, but we're going to be in it together. And so these open conversations about dementia were something that could really sustain these caregivers because they were able to reaffirm sort of their connection and their dedication to each other before the symptoms really took hold.
And what a gift that they were able to have that conversation and that they were able to hold on to that through the journey with dementia. It's such a reminder of the importance of having an early diagnosis so you can plan ahead and have those conversations in advance. The next one is avoiding confrontation. I bet you could talk to us about this one all day.
Oh, yes, that can be a whole nother podcast, is avoiding confrontation. But just to be brief, I found that the caregivers I talked to were very strategic about when is the time that I should engage in some type of confrontation and when is it not really worth it. And I love, one woman told me that her husband just refused to put on pajamas anymore. And she said, you know, I used to try to fight it, like, you should put on your pajamas. And he'd say, nope, I won't do it. And she realized having this battle, this ongoing conflict about wearing pajamas was pointless and was creating unnecessary strain in her relationship. And I think this is really important when we think about communicating with our family member who has dementia, recognizing some of the things we might have conflicts over are just not worth our time. And so these caregivers, really with the aim of maintaining a positive, caring environment in their relationship, they became really strategic. And if there was something that didn't need to be fought over, they avoided those confrontations. If they could work around behind the scenes, or if they could just deal with their partner sleeping in their clothes, they would do those type of things. Really, with the aim of, again, preserving that well-being of the relationship, preserving goodwill in their relationship.
And kind of going along those lines, your next strategy is another avoid, which is avoid bringing attention to symptoms.
So not only were they pretty strategic about avoiding unnecessary conflicts, they also were really mindful of how their spouse might feel if they pointed out symptoms. So they would do things like, rather than sitting and talking about their spouse to the doctor with their spouse sitting there, they would send a letter or write up some notes that were private, so the doctor could see them, but so that they didn't have to embarrass or shame their spouse by talking about some of the behaviors that maybe came along with dementia. Or it would be things like letting them struggle to do something for a while. Not that, you know, not something that would hurt them, but, you know, if they're trying to figure out something, not taking over and doing things for them because they aren't able to, but letting them have that independence. So it was really about protecting their spouse's sense of self, their confidence. And these were, again, strategies to try to preserve their spouse's happiness and well-being and really help them have that sense of love and care in their relationship.
These communication strategies from the participants reminds me of being in a support group and hearing all kinds of ideas that others have used and been successful with. And the next one is engaging in daily conversations and activities. Will you share with us more about that?
Yeah, I found that even in the really more severe stages of the disease, even when their family member was living maybe in a care facility, these spouses made it a really big point to spend time with their partner. And so these daily conversations and activities shifted over the course of the disease, whereas earlier in the disease trajectory, they could do a lot more. You know, one of the couples I talked to, they would play Name That Tune. And so she would play an old tune and he could still name that tune. Later on, maybe it would be playing simple games. And really, even at the end, one of the gentlemen I talked to said, I just go and I sit with my wife and I hold her hand and we watch the birds sing in the trees. And so just these really simple ways to spend time together were meaningful and helped them maintain this sense of connection and closeness with their spouse.
I think in your example of just sitting and holding hands and watching the birds, you were kind of illustrating your final communication strategy, which was communicating love and affection.
Yeah, which this is so, I mean, if you're going to transcend dementia through love, communicating love is right in there as an important way to maintain that relationship. And of course, they did this in sort of expected ways, like hugging their loved one or giving them a kiss, sitting and holding hands, some of those affectionate behaviors. But what really struck me is the way that caregivers talked about the act of providing care as a way to communicate love. One of the men that I talked to, he said, you know, I cut my wife's fingernails and I brush her hair and I make sure that she feels like she's taken care of. And that's how I show her that I love her. Like, this act of providing care is how I love my partner. That's how I show love to my family member. And so communicating love is so much bigger than just saying I love you or, you know, giving a kiss, but it's these acts of loving care. And many of the caregivers I talked to mentioned that this act of providing care was a way of kind of reaffirming their love and strengthening that sense of love for their family member who has dementia.
This has been such a fascinating conversation full of all kinds of wonderful tips. I'm so interested to find out about your current research or your future research.
Oh, thank you. Yes. I mean, I'm very excited about some of the work I'm doing right now. You know, this study that we talked about, we found some communication strategies and we saw these changes over time. And one of the things that I walked away with, one of the questions I walked away with was, well, how do they adapt their communication, these caregivers, as their relationship is changing? And so one of the current projects I've been working on is sort of mapping out the process of change in communication for family caregivers to a person with dementia. And so that's been really interesting. I probably don't have time to unpack all of it, but one of the big pieces is just that recognition of dementia and how it influences their family members' behavior. And that moment of kind of recognizing the way dementia is shaping their interactions was so important for helping caregivers adapt how they're communicating and really helping them find strategies to communicate that are going to be more effective. So I guess that's just a teaser, but ongoing work, there's so much to find out. And I just love working with caregivers and really hearing about their experiences and trying to find ways to make their experiences easier.
So more to come from you, and we will look forward to learning from you. Before we close today, give us your final thought when it comes to your research into turning points in relationships and communication strategies.
I think the big takeaway and really the thing that drives my research is it's so important to recognize that our relationships do not end with a dementia diagnosis, and that there is so much relating and so much conversation and so much life that continues. I think as we are navigating these really difficult spaces, appreciation of the way that goodness can continue to be a part of our relationships is really important and empowering. And that just because a family member has a difficult diagnosis, that doesn't mean that that's the end of the relationship, but these relationships can continue and they can even be fulfilling and loving and close as the disease progresses and as the symptoms impact the family member with dementia. So I think that is such an important message that I hope that everyone who talks to me has, like, relationships and relating continue. They go through this really difficult disease trajectory.
Today, our conversation has been with Dr. R. Amanda Cooper, a family communication researcher and assistant professor at the University of Connecticut. We appreciate you helping us untangle communication as a strategy to manage turning points in relationships.
Thank you so much for having me. I have just loved talking with you and sharing a little bit of some of the work that I've been doing.
Thank you so much, Dr. Cooper. And thank you, Heather, for another great conversation. And as always, thank you to you, our listeners, for joining us. And if you haven't already, please subscribe, review, and share this podcast. I'm looking forward to our next conversation on Dementia Untangled.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Dementia Untangled. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Dementia Untangled is hosted by Heather Mulder and Janice Greeno, produced and edited by Amber Ayers, and is brought to you by Banner Alzheimer's Institute and Banner Sun Health Research Institute. We are supported by generous donations to the Banner Alzheimer's Foundation.
Please visit our website at bannerhealth.com/Alzheimer's and follow us on Facebook to learn about upcoming events. If you have questions or comments, please email us at dementiauntangled@bannerhealth.com.